When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hi, folks. How are you? I hope you are in a good place. You've had a great weekend. Maybe involved watching a few things. I actually just ducked. Sorry, that's my dog in the background. He's desperate for a walk, of which I'm about to take him on after I leave this, which weirdly reminds me of what I did over the weekend. On Friday night, I was lucky enough to host a conversation with Jesse Armstrong, the man behind many things, including Peep Show and Succession. And his new film, Mountainhead, that's available now on Sky in the UK and HBO Max around the rest of the world. What's the premise of it? Well, it's four tech lords, like tech dudes, which include Steve Carell, Jason Schwartzman, and they all congregate at a mountaintop mega mansion that is owned by Jason Schwartzman's character. And it's a kind of dude weekend, poker, you know, bowling, beers, all that kind of thing. And it's so clever, it's so terrifying, it's so funny. And it's this kind of thing about people who are so successful, how can they be so stupid and so out of touch with kind of just reality and humanity? Anyway, it is available now, so you should go and check it out. And the reason I mention it is because at the screening was Adam Buxton, who I've really got to thank for this podcast being here, because a kind of succession of events that involved Adam are the reason that I'm here, to be honest, doing this podcast. One of which is that the wonderful Ben, who has worked with me on this podcast from the start, I never would have met Ben had it not been for me working with Adam Buxton on Six Music back in the day. So there we go. There's a little connection there. But also, just in terms of where Adam was with being such at the forefront of the podcast world, kind of that combined with getting the chance to work with him on Six Music for a year meant that, I don't know, I just feel like I got the confidence from working with him to get off my backside and release this podcast. And so I did. And 10 years next year, we'll have the anniversary. So Adam Buxton, thank you, sir. And it was so lovely to catch up with you very briefly, but very lovely on Friday night. So there we go. And that was all just from my dog going, I want my dinner. Anyway, there we go. What was I saying before? That I was saying that I wonder if you'd had the chance to watch any films. And I just ducked out from watching a film with my youngest. He was really interested to kind of just dive into films that neither of us really had heard about or knew about. And we came across this really cute little film called Bookworm. It's got a young actress in it called Nell, who's going to be in the final season of Stranger Things. Elijah Wood's in it as well. And we've just started it. I like the look of it. It's good. But I've ducked out to deliver this voiceover for this week's episode of the podcast. That might be the most waffly introduction I've ever done to any episode of the show. So I apologise and I'll get back on point. So this week, our latest guest on, I think it might be because I'm quite giddy about this film and it's so funny and they're so brilliant. But our latest guests on soundtracking are Tom Basden and Tim Key, writers, co-stars of The Ballad of Wallace Island. Now, the film also stars Katie Mulligan and it tells the story of ex-lovers and former bandmates who reunite for a private gig at the island home of an eccentric millionaire. This film is beautiful. If you know Tim Key and Tom, you know their work kind of separately, whether it be Tim's work with Coogan or Tom's work on Afterlife with Ricky Gervais. Just, they're brilliant actors. They're brilliant comedy actors. Their timing is impeccable. But together they have something really, really special. This film, as you'll hear them talk about, was born out of a short that they made years ago. And I'm so glad that it's kind of stayed there and reminded them that there was something about these characters and this story that needed more to be told, because it's a bit of a gift, this film. The premise of it's really quite simple, but it's just got such heart to it. It'll make you feel all the feels. It's just really, really beautiful, really funny. And it really stayed with me. I think it's a really marvellous, marvellous film. The Ballad of Wallace Island is what it's called. And it's scored by an artist called Adam, whose full name is Adam Elan. And we're going to begin with his cue, You Don't Travel Light. Tim, hello, Tom.
Hi, Edith. I'm a bit sweaty, actually. Do you mind if I take my jumper off?
Go for it.
Wow.
Wowee. Just met.
Yeah.
No, sorry. And I am on Zoom. I should stress that. But it's not as weird as it seems.
I'm at a decent temperature.
Yeah, me too, actually. I'm good to go. Listen, I'm so happy I get to chat to you both about this film because, you know, Andy just said that I saw it a while ago, but it's kind of just... You can't stop thinking about it because it just made me feel all the feels. Yeah, I just laughed. I just felt great when I came out the cinema after seeing it. So huge congratulations.
Wow, thank you so much.
I also watched the short this morning, which I didn't know about until obviously this film. And then that's kind of, you know, the origin story, so to speak, I guess.
Yeah. That's next level. That is very diligent journalism to watch that.
When was the last time you watched it?
Oh, this morning as well, yeah. You've got to remember your roots, haven't you?
But there's something incredibly sort of timeless about these characters and this story, and it could almost be set in different times. Do you know what I mean? I think that that's one of the beautiful things about it, is that it's got a kind of real timeless quality to it, you know, in terms of the themes as well, that it's really resonating. Did you kind of think about that in a way at all?
I think it was part of our thinking that taking a character like Herb and then later Nell to an island means that we can very obviously isolate them, but also kind of keep them out of modern life a bit. And so you have a situation where my character Herb essentially loses his phone, or his phone breaks in the first kind of minute of the film, and then he's got to use a phone box from then on. And we're sort of plunging him back in time. There is a, you know, Tim's character Charles kind of lives in a different era in some ways. In his head, it's sort of, what is it, like the kind of 2005, I guess.
Yeah, my guy's not from this era.
No. So there's stuff built into the story that means that everyone is kind of plucked out of modern life and forced to kind of actually engage with their surroundings and the people around them all the time.
I think we quite like, maybe this isn't true. I quite like island films anyway. The Banshees of Inisherin and things like that. And I think me and Tom both watched, I don't know, I think you watched Rams, didn't you?
Yeah, I like Rams.
Yeah, like that's a sort of weird, kind of like those films where you're just, they're nothing like our lives, and you just pluck some people and just plop them somewhere and see it all play out. I mean, it works wonders also with things like budget and possibilities of actually filming it. But I think I quite enjoy small films. I think I get lost in sort of ones where there's a city. I can't really handle those ones.
Yeah, even things like weirdly, I was thinking like Harold and Maude and stuff like that, you know, in terms of where you're really quite sort of you're kind of just almost kind of cocooned in the characters almost in a way, and they're just, you know, and their meanderings and existence and conversations and things.
Well, I think also we definitely, I'm very confident to say that we both love Nuts in May. And have you seen that one?
No.
You got to watch Nuts in May. I mean, it's all very well us going on about this one, but I think it might be worth
Writing it on a
spending the
post-it.
next, I think, and also the next 30 minutes talking about it. It's a Mike Leigh film. It's fantastic. But yeah, all of that stuff, I think we really like. And I watch those films and think maybe one day I could make a film like that. I'm not watching, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and thinking I could make a film like that.
I don't know, I'd quite like to see Charles in that environment. I think that would
Oh God,
be
yeah, that's
absolutely
inevitable.
amazing.
Yeah, no, that
Yeah.
has to happen. Yeah, well, even as I was saying it, I realised that must be the next film.
What was the catalyst though in terms of this being something that is it like 18 years or something since you did the short film and these kind of these characters and the chemistry between the two of you? And I know you've, you know, continued to work together and things, but was there a catalyst in terms of we need to really make this into a film? We really need to kind of try and push this through. Was there anything in particular, or have you been kind of secretly chipping away at it for that length of time?
We
Bit of
certainly
both,
would
really.
talk about it every so often. I think, in truth, we hadn't really been chipping away. What we'd do is we'd talk about it every now and again, and then whenever James Griffiths, our director, was back in the country because he was living in LA for most of the period between the short and the feature, we'd all talk about it and enthuse about it, and then just life would take over and we wouldn't do anything. And I think it was around 2020, either with the pandemic or just before, we really started to actually force ourselves to have a look at it all again and go back over it and sort of try and put our money where our mouth is and commit to actually turning the
Oh
short in.
yeah, I definitely did in lockdown. Get arrive at his house drunk and sort of him answer the door and me say, "I'm going to fund it." Oh, I mean, I hadn't thought it through. I couldn't fund it. Yeah, it was definitely starting to bubble up into sort of. We definitely loved making the short film. Definitely did go back and look at it sometimes. Definitely had obviously loads of other ideas in the interim years, but there's tons of stuff we made and wrote in the early 2000s that we'd never revisit, but this was the one we kind of were like, that could be a feature film. We just didn't really know how until 15 years later.
Were there any specific inspirations behind those two characters between Herb and Charles?
Probably. My one, it's just sort of, kind of people just wandering into rooms who are like friends of your family, who like make noises and stuff and go da 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 da. Okay, fine. I guess we'll build a film about one of those people.
I think I accidentally admitted a while ago in an interview that Herb and Charles's relationship is very similar to mine and my mum's, and that there is a kind of teenager and parent sort of vibe going on, I think, particularly in the first kind of 20 minutes. And so I think that's probably in there. I think that's stewing around in the kind of origin of the film.
That's so funny. I've got a 16-year-old son, and honestly, I'm just like flashed there of you saying that of me outside his room, kind of, you know, doing funny knocks to try and get in, trying to get him to go, come in, mom. And just like, you know, just wanting to be like, you know, accepted into his kind of even peripheral vision. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, yeah, that's so brilliant. I hadn't thought about it that way. That's amazing. Tom, I can see the guitar behind you. So clearly your, you know, music's a big part of
There we
just
go.
you.
I'm sorry, that I haven't put it there. Can you see my awards behind
Well,
as well, Lee?
you have put it there,
No,
obviously.
I haven't put it there for the purpose of this conversation.
Edith, I've never seen that guitar hanging on the wall before.
Cue the kind of the guitar holder falling off the wall, as the
Hopefully. Yeah, I mean, look, I've been obviously, I've been looking for an excuse to try and fold some music into things over the years because I do love doing music. I love writing and playing songs, but I don't have anything like enough talent or bravery to try and commit to that as an actual career. So this is the sort of closest I can come to it, I think.
Talk to me though about in terms of writing the songs for this character, you know, in terms of because, you know, there's music that exists for the short, then we have the film and there's, you know, clearly songs within there and how much you wanted to bring through from that and I guess how much you developed as well, or you developed the character in terms of, you know, being a solo artist to then being part of this duo with now.
Yeah, I think as soon as I convinced myself that I definitely was writing in character and it wasn't like just me writing love songs on an acoustic guitar, like a knob at a party. I think as soon as I got into the idea of the character, I gave myself license to do a lot more of it. And I think once we knew that we had the character of Nell and that Herb and Nell were in a band together, it really informed the kind of songs I was writing, and it allowed both the songs tonally, but also the lyrics to kind of to sort of illuminate their backstory, to kind of to provide all the kind of emotional context for what's happened between the characters, in the knowledge that they're never going to actually really address it themselves. And also to sort of to show why the band were really meaningful for Charles and his wife. So once I kind of knew what the songs were for, and also which points in the film they were going to be used, the writing process became a lot easier in some ways. The songs for the short, of which there are a couple of in the feature, are much more sort of whimsical, really. It's things like Raspberry Fair and Sky Child. They're not really about very much. They're just kind of like, that's when, when Herb was a solo artist and Charles just happens to like his songs because he does. Those songs are a little bit more whimsical.
You were looking at nothing, talking to no one, wandering nowhere in particular. Eyes bright and bold, marigold in your hair. I've been trying my luck and hooking a duck and never once struck on the top prize. Then to my surprise I spied you standing there. Raspberry Fair, I saw you waltzing away with my eye. Raspberry Fair, oh, but I couldn't say hi by the coconut shy.
The ones for the feature, which is the majority of them that have made it through, they're much more, romantic. They're kind of about being young and hopeful and innocent, which is obviously the kind of period in both of their lives that they're slightly longing to return to.
September the 8th, and summer is ending. I'm lying in bed and I'm watching back. You don't want to wait, keep on pretending. The cares of the world will never come. But love will give me one more day to keep our worries away. Soon our lives can resume, just please not today. Oh, lover, please stay.
It's so lovely, kind of, because I think that the film has just got so many beautiful kind of themes and almost kind of parallels between, you know, these two characters. And you kind of, you know, you first of all think that they're such different people, but then their kind of experiences, both dealing with loss in a way, do you know what I mean? And that kind of, it's so beautiful, the kind of the way that their similarities and their kind of similar lived experiences, I guess, in a way are kind of help that relationship kind of come closer in a way. It's beautiful.
Well, thank you. And I think that's something that you hopefully feel in the film is that Herb really writes Charles off at the start because he's just another fan for him.
Yeah.
And it's only when he sort of understands that they really do have a connection that's sort of quite, and as you say, a lot of parallels.
Yeah, I think also that is where, I mean, Carey Mulligan is like, she's amazing in the film. And there's like these real kind of powerful scenes with Carey and Tom's character Herb. But I think what she does for the film is just in that middle bit, just kind of galvanizes everything her character does. and she's so good at it as a as an actor. But yeah, you have this guy writing off this other guy, and then you suddenly have him seeing this guy through Nell's eyes and Nell's laughter, and Nell sort of seeing the best in my character sort of unlocks a less gloomy aspect of Tom's character. And I feel like that's sort of, in a way, the lifeblood of the only having like watched it a lot and had and done a lot of Q and A's. I'm gradually realizing that's what's happening in the film. But that middle half an hour is what is it
You
makes the
just
film,
focus
I
on your own
think.
performance, otherwise, don't you?
I'm just what, yeah,
It's watching me.
I spent the first five viewings watching me, but then it's come to my attention that Carrie and Tom are really good in the middle. And I think there's two other actors who are fantastic.
I believe that she's part of this. I mean, she is almost kind of like this. She's just an observer, you know, in terms of a lot of it. She's kind of the way that she kind of almost has a slight step back from the two, and is almost kind of she's almost kind of guiding them towards each other. It's really great. It's so great. But it's down. You did a cold call, was that right, Tim? Or like literally like.
I did a cold call. We wrote
Well,
down
hang on, it was
our
an email. It wasn't like a
well,
sort of
hang
signature
on a minute.
request.
Hang on a
You weren't
minute.
sort of selling a life insurance over the phone.
Well, I did do that also. We drew up our hit list. Carey Mulligan was at the top, and then there was a large gap, and then the number two person. And then I said, I can get I said I can get Carey Mulligan.
I
And
love it.
anyway, yeah, Tom's like doing this face, going, "Yeah, okay, fine. I'm working with a clown." But then she'd emailed my she'd emailed asking me to do something about 2 years before, which I wasn't able to do because I didn't quite have the skill set. It, like it was a hosting an event, but I had her email address, and so and I knew she must vaguely know, be aware of us in some way. So yeah, I wrote her a very an email that I'm extremely proud of, and she replied to it that day. And then yeah, there was a call. We're just lucky. You don't know what you don't know who knows who or is aware of who, you know. We could have approached someone else of Carey's quality who's like laughs us out of town. But Carey didn't. Carey was like, she laughs us into town, yeah. She listens to our radio show. And so she was, you know, you had a starting point which is not what these guys have got some brass neck contacting me. It was more, oh, okay, yeah, I like the idea of it. Enough at least for us to send the script. And then after that, it becomes whether or not she enjoys the idea of being Nell.
Well, so if you don't ask, you don't get, do
That's certainly true. I've tried a few emails in the past.
I love it. You turn around, you turn up drunk at the door. You're like, I'm gonna pay for it,
Yes.
and then you're like, follow that up with, I'm gonna get Carey Mulligan.
I do sound like a, yeah, I'm pacing myself as quite an erratic character.
No, I think this is like you get shit done, basically. It's good.
Yeah, well, we made a feature film, you know.
I love the fact that you mentioned there, Tim, about Tom's character, that the sort of the slightly gloomy nature as he arrives on the island. It's not for the whole film, obviously, but being married to a musician, I very much saw that truth in that character
Oh,
of
really?
like,
Good.
yeah,
Yeah.
I
Yeah,
think
what's
he's
that about? Because almost all the musicians
mashed it.
I've seen very gloomy and quite abrasive. Why is
No,
that?
there's the pressure of creativity, I think, Tom.
Oh. It's nice to block me out when you two start talking about creativity. I enjoy that.
I think that there is so much that people are going to get from seeing this film, both just in terms of how it makes you feel, as I said at the start, sort of thing as well. But I also wanted to talk to you about working with Adam on the as the composer on this film as well. Who
Yeah.
weirdly, I remember playing on the radio like back at when he was before he started doing composing stuff and things for loads of different things. It was Home Songs, was that first
Right,
record?
that's right.
First,
Yeah.
I mean, I
Yeah, it's
just
a great
remember
album.
kind of going, oh, amazing.
Yeah.
What was that like working, you know, working with him? How much did you work with him in terms of, you know, because it has to kind of, there has to be a relationship between those songs and the score in a way, in terms of they can't feel too clunky, I guess, with each other.
I guess he came in once we'd shot everything and once we were, you know, putting it all together in the edit, that's when Adam came in and was writing, you know, bits of score. But also he started to help me with the songs for the recordings, and he was incredibly helpful with recording with Carey and just kind of working out really good harmonies and you know, other bits of instrumentation. And he's just one of those brilliant, annoying people who can kind of play any instrument. So he would just kind of pick up a cello and pick up a harmonica and a squeeze box over, just kind of go, well, put a bit of this on it. He helped me enormously and was really, really generous with his creativity. So, there's lots about the overall, the musical kind of world of the film that is
Yeah.
definitely. But yeah, it was really lovely working with him, particularly because he obviously is from that kind of period of sort of music that the band themselves are meant to be tapping into. So he was a really useful source just to kind of ask him questions about stuff and about sounds, you know.
Ever been that obsessive about a band or artist? I mean, not to the extent of Charles, but like kind of obsessed over your favorite band or artist over the years.
I certainly wrote down all of Nick Kershaw's lyrics when I was about 9 years old, if you
Was
want to
not
put it that way.
expecting that at
No, I
all.
wasn't. But I think after that, yeah, I think I tried to steal some of Belle and Sebastian's sheet music after a gig once and got booted off the stage. I just wanted to grab whatever I could. I've been quite obsessive about a few artists, I guess. But I think as I've got older, I've kind of realised that actually, I would hate to meet Bob Dylan or Neil Young or Van Morrison or something like that. I think it'd be terrible. And I'd now, I now see the need for a separation of the
Space.
artist. Yeah.
Tim, what about you?
Yeah, I got obsessed with an artist called Vyacheslav Mishurin. Do you know
No.
him? I mean, he wrote sort of Soviet lounge music, really, in the 1950s and 60s. And a friend of mine gave me she was working for some record label, and she gave me it at a dinner party. And I think the idea was that she gave it to me because it was like ridiculous. Yeah, so I took it home and I really liked it. And weirdly, became the next day, me and Tom went and filmed a short, our first ever short film, which cost £200 to make. And I put this on in the car again to say, listen to this ridiculous music. We played it on a loop for about 4 hours. And all became obsessed with it. And then it became the soundtrack to that short film. And then when I started doing stand up, it became my walk-on music and played underneath all of my set. And then we started a sketch show, me and Tom and our friends Lloyd and Stefan, and it played underneath all of the sketches. It's just such evocative music. It was
Wow.
a cr it was yeah, it's called Easy USSR Volume 2. That's the one you're after. And I was fortunate enough, the girl who gave it to me also made radio documentaries. And so about 10 years later, we got back in touch and made a radio documentary about it. I mean, she started doing some research about it, and it's genuinely interesting stuff. They used to play it in supermarkets and stuff in the 50s and 60s in the USSR. And then when the cosmonauts went up and did their first spacewalk, where I don't think you take that much stuff up at that point. They took that up and had that as a reminder of Earth. So that's my
Wow,
one.
that's the
Well,
next
I'm
film.
glad we talked about that more than the film.
Well, that was quite a long sentence, but I mean, you know, we can sort of lose some of that, I guess, and focus on
Never.
your wonderful relationship with modern music.
How much freedom did you have on, you know, whilst you were filming? Because those, the kind of the relationship between you two, those conversations, they feel so kind of sort of they're fast, they're sharp, they're kind of they feel really natural and so kind of in the moment of the characters. But obviously there's a script, but how much did you kind of stick to script, or how much freedom did you give yourself to kind of improv and sort of play with those scenes, I think?
I mean, I think in general we're pretty disciplined, so we make sure that the script is exactly what we want to shoot, and so we don't go into it thinking that, you know, there are scenes we're going to fix on the day, because we knew that we wouldn't have had time for any of that. The script is very lean, and we're very confident with what we're going to do. And then it's sort of case by case. If the scene is such that, like, you know, you could let it run, you can play, and the setup's quite simple, then we definitely would improvise. And there's some scenes where we, you know, some of that improv, there's probably quite a few scenes where some of the improv's made it into the final cut. Anything with any kind of movement or action or physical joke, I think, is really, really tightly choreographed. So it's just sort of a bit case by case. But the headline is we had 18 days to shoot this. So even, you
Oh
know,
my God.
so with no improv at all, the director's still sort of looking at his watch and like slightly wincing if we want to do another take, having done two or three. So we really had to know exactly what we were doing.
We had to be good boys and learn our lines as really well, and then that would give us the capacity to have some fun afterwards. I think if you're not on your lines, then you're unlikely to get any of the really fun improvisation stuff because you're just sort of slightly chasing it. I think because it's our film, I mean, we were quite crazy. We were running back to our marks and stuff like that. I mean, it was kind of like quite visibly a film that we had a lot of emotional and creative investment in. And so that we needed to make sure that we kind of were setting the tone for the whole set, I think, in a way that we both do other things with other people quite a lot. And with this one, I think you sort of have to be responsible and sort of go, if we really, really try hard to do it really well, then at least we give ourselves the chance of A, everyone else sort of also doing that, but also give ourselves some freedom to play around as well and have fun.
Sean Clifford in this film as well.
Oh, iconic.
As you
Just
say.
world class.
Oh my God. I mean, you've seen her in so many things and she's fantastic. You know what I mean? You know that you're in for a great time when you know she's part of a cast. But I don't know, there's something specifically outstanding about her performance in this film. Yeah, it's just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Did you write it for her?
No, we actually cast Sian quite late, and I think I don't I think for a while we just didn't quite know how those scenes were going to feel. And then we offered it to Sian, and we're both, you know, huge fans of Sian, particularly in Fleabag, just incredible. We offered it to her, and then we sort of found out when she was on the way down, she'd come from the job, she sort of messages going, "I don't think I can do a Welsh accent," and we were like, "Oh, okay." So then she got to set. And she's obviously brilliant at doing a Welsh accent, so it's completely fine. And she's sort of like, she's very hard on herself. So she'll do a take and be like, "Oh, that was rubbish." And we sort of go, "No, that was genuinely fantastic." And even showing her the film the other night, we were with her at a screening, and she's so brilliant. And we were kind of banging on about how wonderful she is. And she sort of
I
she
think
doesn't like it.
she's coming around to the idea, I think.
Yeah, I hope so.
She wasn't like, oh, I'm terrible. But yeah, I think she's absolutely outstanding.
Oh, it's the character's so brilliant as well, because she's got this kind of, I love her whole kind of doesn't give a shit about anything. She's so in the moment and in the conversation that she's in, you know, whether she's talking about her son or rice. She's not that she's not paid attention to things in the world. It's just like that stuff's not important. There's something just so beautifully refreshing about her character and approach to life. I loved it.
Having seen it a few times, I think I don't know. With me and Tom are sort of both big sort of Shop fans. Where there's all this other stuff going on, and the sort of emotional heart of the film maybe slightly elsewhere. But I always like it when people just wander into that shop, because you just get Sian's energy, and also the shop's kind of its own little character in a way. It's a very idiosyncratic little environment, and yeah, it really kind of is a nice thing rhythmically in the film, I think, when you go in there.
You're right, Tom. Just fall off your seat.
I had to plug in my laptop, Edith.
Oh dear.
Horrible.
I hoped you wouldn't notice.
It's all
Well,
gone.
it's a, it's a,
I'm crawling under the
we're on
desk.
Zoom. I hoped you wouldn't notice,
Well,
Edith.
what do you,
It's desperate stuff, really.
I thought, should I
We've
turn off my
waited
camera
20
and
years to be interviewed by Edith Bowman. And then
Oh,
you start
come
crawling
on.
around.
Oh my God.
I'm
You've thrown
sorry.
me off track now. Oh, where is this place? Like Wallace Island. I was like going on, and it's like Australia. It's like,
Yeah, well, Australia, yeah.
yeah, no,
It's
it's
central Sydney.
like, you go on Google Maps, it's like, oh, it's not where I thought it was. But yeah, what's the reality of where you shot?
We shot just off the Welsh coast in Pembrokeshire, so not far from Tenby. And just actually off the coast of Tenby, there's the island where the monks live. I think, is it called Canby Island? And I think that sort of island is like the kind of inspiration for Wallace Island. There are a few of those. Skomer's another one, a few of those little islands off the coast of Pembrokeshire that are just sort of very rugged and beautiful. And if you wanted to kind of disappear from the world, you'd probably do quite a good job of doing that if you lived there.
Were the interiors and stuff filmed sort of somewhere less kind of remote and I guess easier for a production when you say you had 18 days to shoot it, or was it all kind of done on that location?
Yeah, we didn't make it that easy, I don't think, for the crew. They'd have been on easier missions. It was all in that one area, but not quite in that one area enough that it wasn't a nightmare. I mean, a lot of inaccessible to get to the shop was not easy, like a long walk with carrying stuff, and then the beach, obviously difficult. And I don't think anyone particularly loved us shooting stuff on the top of a cliff, but we are where we are. And then all of the stuff in the house, obviously much easier. That was all in one house. But yeah, there was no shooting stuff in London and then going to
Yeah.
the coastline for a couple of days. It was all, 18 days just fully immersed in making the film.
Do you think that made a difference in terms of that kind of, talking about that remote nature of things?
Yeah, I think it definitely does. I don't know. Yeah, all that stuff is very difficult to
Well, I
quantify,
think
isn't
it
it?
does, and
But
I think the other thing is that, and I think this is, I hope this is sort of evidenced in the film itself, is that the kind of relationships you get as a cast, as an ensemble, but also with the crew, are just become very, very kind of tight very quickly. And so it meant that, with us and Carey, or with us and Sian, or with AK, we hadn't spent much time with them before the shoot. In fact, with AK and Sian, almost none. With Carey, like a day or two. But I think because we were
Wow.
all there and we were all in this remote place, and you kind of got to be there all day, but it's also very beautiful. It just means that you can really develop a kind of like a team spirit quite quickly. And playing these roles where you're meant to have a relationship that goes back 10, 20, 25 years, it just feels quite achievable because you feel like you're getting to know someone in a very real way. And sometimes when you're shooting, you just don't get that at all. You don't really get any time together apart from the actual takes. So I think that
Yeah.
was pretty helpful.
You do feel that history and that, even in that, around the dinner table, aren't you, where there's that kind of lovely, it's a real apprehension to kind of to let go, and then it just as it does, it's so beautiful to watch.
It was honestly just like a kind of fantastic 5-hour dinner for us, just sort of as friends. And it was just lovely. And the fact that you're doing that, see, and similarly the one earlier in the film with AK, the four of us around the dinner table, they were just great. They were real highlights of the shoot, actually.
Before I finish, are we getting an album of the songs
Do you
from the
mean are you
film?
getting one for free?
No, I would
I can
never
arrange.
expect a freebie. No, I will buy it. Same way, if I get free tickets to a concert, I'll always buy a t-shirt. So I will be buying the album. I just wanted to know if it's going to be available for us buying
Oh,
public.
it's gonna be a don't you worry about that. It's
Amazing!
you can currently listen to all the music on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you get your music from. And then
Yeah.
there's a physical vinyl and CD. So in keeping with the kind of, slight throwback to the mid-noughties, you will be able to get this album as a physical album as well very soon.
What about a gig?
Listen, if you want to chuck me half a
Yeah.
million quid for a private gig, I'll do it in a heartbeat. I would love to do some gigs, and do
Glastonbury.
songs. I'd love to, but
Glastonbury.
I don't know
Oh,
that
that'd be good.
I don't know that Carey will be free, is the problem, but I'll
It's like
work on it.
he's
Got
quite in demand.
cinema tents there, isn't it? It's like show the film, pop yourself over to, I mean,
Nice
I'm thinking
low-key
I think the
little
park
flat.
stage would be good.
Well, I mean, me and Tom will definitely be free. It's just working on Carey. I saw them sing last week at a screening. That was something else. Beautiful.
Oh, you gotta do it.
Yeah, I want to. I want to. I just, I think I have to see how much affection there is for the music at the end of all of this. And if there's a possibility, then I'll be like a rat.
I think there'll certainly be bits and pieces of affection for that music.
Yeah.
Hope so.
At least a gentle hug.
That'll do.
Oh God, yeah.
Tim, you need to send one of your special emails again to Kerry to get it to
I
happen.
do. I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
Send her a load of tour dates and
Tom.
go, yeah,
Yeah.
great,
Tom,
yeah.
I mean, Tom is in touch with Carey now since we started making the film.
Oh
I'm
yeah.
not his sort of, I'm not his go-between between him and
Right.
Carey.
His pimp.
Yeah. But no, I will try and oil the wheels. I'd love for that to happen.
Be so great. Be
I
so
just don't
great.
see I don't see how I get money from that, but I suppose that's not the main thing, is it?
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Oh, I don't
No,
agree.
well,
Don't
I
mind.
can work
That's a
that out.
question for marketing.
Yes.
Right, random one, just because, you know, having enjoyed watching this film so much, but then also your careers outside of this film as well, you know, and what that's brilliantly been. If you could, being fans of comedy and being fans of drama and TV and film and music, as you were talking about, Tim, this wonderful artist who I've spelt really badly, but I'm definitely going to find it. If you could be in the scene of any film or TV show that you've loved over the years, what would it be and why?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind being sort of airdropped into with Merle and I at a decent moment.
As
Just those two.
one of those two, as one as with now
I think
or
I'd have to remove one of the people and just, don the long coat.
there must and there shall be aspirin.
I came to that film relatively late. I mean, I don't think I watched it until my 20s, and it is. I watched it again the other day, and also I bought the screenplay
Oh,
recently and read it.
cool.
The screenplay is fantastic. The stage directions are amazing, and yeah, I think that's kind of in terms of like a combination of the writing and the alchemy with the performances. It's sort of beyond compare, really. So maybe I'd go for with now and I.
Great show, Tom.
To fulfill a lifelong ambition, I think if you could drop me into Bugsy Malone, even as one of the kids who passes the thing to Babyface on the wall, that'd be fine. Just watch it. I mean, I don't know if I could do it as a grown-up now. That might feel really weird if there's a man in his 40s just passing the baseball bat to Babyface. But I would have,
Everyone else is still kids, and it's
everyone
just
else is still the kid. But I would have loved that, I guess. Yeah, I think now probably. Oh, I don't know. I think like I wouldn't mind sort of plopping into a Fargo or a Big Lebowski somewhere. That kind of thing would be fun. I just know those films really well, so I wouldn't have to learn the lines.
There we go, job done already. Thank you so much for your time today and huge congratulations on the film, and thank you for a wonderful, wonderful experience watching it. It's been a treat to get to chat to you about it today. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
When exposure means addiction. When your soul is for sale. Freedom is exploring your constriction. Like living inside a well. When you're a slave to your emotions. When you're consumed by fear and rage. Freedom is just going through emotions. Like singing inside a cage.
One of the original songs featured in The Ballad of Wallace Island, that's Inside a Whale, as performed by Katie Mulligan and Tom Basden, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Tom and Tim. Now, my huge thanks to both of them for taking the time to talk to us and for the team behind the scenes for making that happen. The Ballad of Wallace Island is on general release now and really, really is deserving of all the praise it is getting from critics. So get yourself along to the cinema and go and watch it, and you'll come out feeling lighter, happier, and kind of like, I don't know, a bit like you could take on the world, to be honest. EdithBowman.com is the place to find every single episode of this podcast. While you can follow us on your socials, we're at Soundtracking UK. Now, we also have a YouTube channel, which is called Soundtracking Extra. So please do subscribe to that for plenty of bonus content. Loads of bits and bobs going up there as we speak. Next up, really super excited to share this conversation with you. I have music editor and producer Laurie Eichler and longtime David Lynch collaborator Dean Hurley. They join me to discuss their work on Twin Peaks. And it's ahead of the first two series and The Return being available on Mubi's platform. And I have to say a massive thank you to the team for getting in touch with me to see if there was anything I could do with celebrating this launch, because I'm so grateful for this conversation with Laurie and Dean. It was such a gift, and I'm so excited to share that with you on next week's episode. So make sure you join me next week as Laurie, Dean and I talk Twin Peaks and David Lynch. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.